Okay, let's do our review as we normally do. We had some questions from Wednesday night. So let's go ahead and I think you had questions 24 through 26. So let's go through the questions. Let's start with question number 24. Question number 24 is, what is the meaning of the word servant as used in Isaiah? And let me just open it up to the class. How did you all answer that?
A person in service of another.
Okay, it's a person in service of another. And in particular, as we did this study here, we looked at the word my servant or his servant, and then it's talking really about God's servant. These are servants of God, and they're put into servants for one service or another. And depending upon who they are and what the what God has instructed them to do is what the what they're doing. Okay, let's go on to next question. Question number 25. There are eight, number 25, there are eight different servants in Isaiah. Name them. Craig Ottersbeck, can you give that one a shot?
Isaiah, Elijah, David, the Messiah, the nation Israel, and then the redeemed Israel, foreigners that serve the Lord, and then the saved and the citizens of Zion.
Okay. So when you think of Isaiah, you've probably heard my servant. You think about Jesus Christ. The point is that there's more than just Jesus Christ. And most particularly, look at that last one. We've read about that in Isaiah 66, the citizens of New Zion. That's us. Isn't that amazing? Here's a book written 700 years before Christ, and it is looking forward and talking about these citizens of the new Zion. And who is that? Well, it's not just the Jews. It's us. And so here Isaiah talking about us and in the new Zion. Okay, now we get into this tough subject of what is Zion. And we talked about quite a bit of this on Wednesday. So what is the literal physical meaning of Zion? It's a two-part question. And what is the spiritual meaning? Todd Aldridge, can you give that one a try? What's the physical meaning?
The physical meaning of Zion was the city of Jerusalem and the area of Jerusalem.
Right. Right, so it was a mountain. The word actually is a mountain. So it's a mountain where the temple was built upon. Jerusalem and the temple meant that God was there with his redeemed people in the temple, and that Jerusalem was going to provide peace and security. That was what it meant to the Jews. And it has the same meaning, the spiritual meaning today. It is the dwelling place of God among his redeemed people where they find peace and security. So it's a concept. And we're in Zion today. We sing songs. We talked about this Wednesday night. March into Zion. There, when you look at the song, it almost says we're going to, you know, we're looking forward to heaven. We're marching toward heaven. Our songs denote that, or that's what we sing about. But Zion, and Isaiah is going to build the new Zion. We went to Hebrews 12, 22, and the writer there, Hebrews, says, you know, talking to the people, you have come to Mount Zion. People already have come to Mount Zion. So Zion is present today. And all it is a concept. It's very similar to the church or the kingdom, but the concept is, because God is with his redeemed people. It's going to provide peace and security, and that's all spiritual. Okay, let's pick up some old questions, hopefully. And let me ask, let's see who we can ask on this one. Craig Moore, let's drop back to question number 8. To whom was the letter written to, and who were the secondary recipients?
It's the Judah and Jerusalem. That's who it was written to. And the secondary recipients are the nations, Jews in Babylonian captivity, mankind.
Yeah, Jews waiting for the Messiah, but you had the most of them. So a lot of other secondary recipients, and not only to Judah and Jerusalem. Okay. And last question on a review, John Bright, can you do number 10? When was the book written? Question number 10.
739 to 690.
Okay. Now, these dates can be off a little bit, but kind of give you a time frame, 739 to 690. Note, we've talked about this before, that the beginning date's important because Isaiah got his call at the death of King Uzziah. So that's the beginning of the 739. How long it goes, we're uncertain, but we put it to 690. The key thing is that why is that time frame so large? Because in Isaiah 1:1, Isaiah wrote these visions during the reigns of four kings. And so you get this long range because it's basically the reign of these four kings that we're going to talk about today. Okay, that's all for the review. Let's open our lessons to page 37. On Sunday, we were talking about the building blocks, and we did not finish. Building blocks number 6, and it's page 37 on your books. Toy, that where you had it marked was the right place. So we have two terms we want to quickly cover that we didn't cover tonight. On Wednesday, I think they should go pretty quick. This is on Roman numeral 4, talking about what is this mountain of the house of the Lord talked about in Isaiah. Y'all did some markings of that. And so what is its meaning? And I think I gave you some verses to look at. But remember when we said that in one of the keys to understanding Isaiah, we mentioned that sometimes you're going to find different words or different phrases having the same meaning. This is a case in point. If you read what this term means, mountain of the house of the Lord, is equivalent to Zion. We already talked about Zion. We know what Zion is. Here's a term, mountain of the house of the Lord is Zion. So how do we know that? Well, two reasons why. If you read Zechariah 8:3 makes this equivalence. Know what Zechariah says. He says, thus says the Lord, I will return to Zion and will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. Then Jerusalem will be called the city of truth, and the mountain of the Lord of hosts will be called the holy mountain. So here Zechariah is making this equivalence. Zion is equivalent to this term, mountain of the Lord, or mountain of the house of the Lord. And when you look at this phrase, it kind of makes sense, right? Where was Zion? It was on a mount, the house. Where is that referring to? The temple. Remember they had the beginning? So it kind of makes sense when you think about that, that this term is equivalent to Zion. And then he also had another verse in Isaiah 40, verse 9. Isaiah 40, verse 9 says, get yourself up on a high mountain, O Zion. So he's defining what high mountain is. O Zion, bearer of good news. Lift up your voice mightily, O Jerusalem, bearer of good news. Also note that both in these passages, not only is Zion and the holy mountain being used equivalent, but you also see Jerusalem also brought in. We looked at Zechariah 8:3, you know, talking about Jerusalem, Zion, mountain and city. All those are equivalent terms here in these particular passages. Okay, let's go on to the next term on Roman numeral 5. And I asked you to look at new heavens and a new earth. And they only occur two places in Isaiah, 65 verse 17 and 66 verse 22. And I asked you in Roman numeral 5b is to list some characteristics. So how do we understand these terms? Well, we look at the Bible to see how these terms are being used. So look at some characteristics. And I asked you to look at these things. And the first one here, I'm not going to read the verses, but in your notes, I'm starting with number 1, going all the way down through number 7. First of all, this thing is created by God. You look at the verses. It's something new. We find that in the name. This next one is a key one. In 65:17, it says, former things not remembered. Former things not remembered. Now, is God going to erase our memory, erase the people's memory? Is it going to? No, it's not that. This phrase means you're not going to be held accountable to what things were in the past. Not held accountable to. Yes, you're going to remember them, but you're not going to be held accountable to them. The next one here is you're going to be glad in and rejoice forever. So here we see this something here. It's going to be rejoicing, and it's going to be unlimited. It's going to be forever. There'll be no more weeping in 65:19. And the next one, 66:22, you endure before me. And the last one, it says, your offspring and your name will endure, 66 verse 22. So when you put all those together, you only got two places here where this phrase occurs. What does this phrase mean? What is its meaning? I asked you to think about what its meaning is. And let me go ahead and, for sake of time, just tell you what I believe it means. All it is talking about the new dispensation. It's a new order, new arrangement. Remember, during this time, they're under the Jewish dispensation, governed by the Jewish covenant. Now he's talking about something new. God's going to create it, something everlasting. And you're not going to be held accountable to. What accountable to it? The old Jewish dispensation. It's a new dispensation, the Christian dispensation, which you're under. And this is why I believe this term is being used. You need to turn there. I got the verse up here on the board, Ephesians 1:10, here the King James Version. He says that in the dispensation of the fullness of times, he might gather together in one all things in Christ, both which are in heaven and which are on earth, even in him. And so here we find a word dispensation, and here we're talking about basically the new covenant. Okay, so those are the two words we did not cover on Wednesday night. Now, in your notebooks, there are many other terms that I'm going to ask you to look at on your own. Maybe as we get through our study, I'll have a chance to refer back to them, but we're not going to cover them in class. So what we want to do now is move on to our lesson for this morning on lesson number 7 on the historical background. Okay, if you open your Bibles to Isaiah 1:1, we've read this verse many times, but let's read it again. Doug, could we get a notebook for our visitors here? In Isaiah 1:1, it says, "The vision of Isaiah, the son of Amos, concerning Judah and Jerusalem, which he saw during the reigns of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah." So as we read Isaiah 1:1, what we find in Isaiah, he's writing these things during the reigns of these four kings. So the purpose of our lesson here this morning here is to understand the background of all these four kings. And I had you do quite a bit of work here under these four kings. I've given you a narrative with some missing blanks. And what we're going to do in class this morning is I've selected five volunteers, and they're going to go ahead and read the narrative with filling in the blanks. So if you've done the exercise, you can listen. If there are some missing blanks you weren't able to fill in, we can answer them in class. And we're going to kind of go through this. Now, for the people that are going to be talking, we're going to provide them a mic, and they're just going to read the narrative so you can follow along in your notes. Now, you might think, well, if this person's talking, I'm off the hook. All I got to do is sit back and listen. And the answer to that thing is no. After each king, the class is going to have an exercise. I'm going to ask you to be listening here, even if you didn't do the exercise. Listen to these things, and then we're going to do a class exercise after each king to see, to summarize what was said. What about this kingdom and the nation? How was it at? So we're going to start with the first king, and Doug offered to go ahead and do the first king. So he'll have a mic. I'm going to turn mine off here.
Okay, Rocky. Uzziah, the first king of Isaiah's writings, was also known as Azariah. He began his reign in the 27th year of King Jeroboam, which was the king of Israel. Uzziah began his reign when he was 16 years old and reigned for 52 years. He did right in the sight of the Lord like his father King Amaziah, but the high places were not taken down. He built and restored Eloth, which is a seaport on the Red Sea. He continued to seek God in the days of the prophet Zechariah, and the Lord God prospered him. He went to war against the Philistines, the Arabians, and the Midianites. He built the cities among the Philistines, and God helped him during these battles. The Ammonites gave tribute to Uzziah, and his fame extended to the border of Egypt, for he became very strong. He built towers in Jerusalem and in the wilderness, and huge cisterns for the cattle. He had an army ready for battle and had many warriors. When he became strong,
stop there, Doug. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You could put many warriors, you could also put many weapons.
Okay.
Go ahead.
When he became strong, he acted corruptly by burning incense on the altar. Because of this sin, the Lord struck him with leprosy, and he lived in a separate house. His son, Jotham, was over the king's house and judged the people of the land. During his rule, five kings in Israel ruled the northern kingdom. These kings did evil in the sight of the Lord and did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, king of Israel. During his reign, Pul, king of Assyria, attacked Israel, and King Menahem of Israel gave Pul 10,000 talents of silver to strengthen his kingdom and for Assyria to leave the land.
Okay, good. Thank you. One other alteration there is when he became,
Doug had strong, also you could put proud, either one. Okay, so let's, you heard what Doug mentioned about the king of Uzziah. Now, so here we have on the overhead, I have four things I'd like you to fill in during the reign. I got two words, a P and a P, and then something, last one, some people practice an I. Okay, so those in the class, after you read what Doug read and you've done your lesson about this King Uzziah, what's the first P? What do you think that first P is? Pardon?
Prosperity,
right. The king was very, it was a time of prosperity, exactly. Okay, what about the second P?
Pride.
Okay, and then the last one, some people practice idolatry. They were still practicing idolatry, even though that whatever they did was, you know, he was a righteous king. He had a problem toward the end. The people still had high places, which they still had idolatry. Okay, let's look at a couple of things here on the map as Doug read. He read about the Ammonites, and the Ammonites were, they were the sons of Lot, and where are the Ammonites at? You can see over here, these are the Ammonites. Of course, we have Judah here in Jerusalem. They also talk about Philistia, and that's located over here. And later on, you'll be hearing things about Moab and Edom. And later on, we're going to hear about Aram, or that's also known as Syria. Another thing here is a present-day map of Jerusalem and Israel and to the south. Here is Jerusalem, and here is the Dead Sea. Way down here is this Eloth or Elath, this port city. It's on the port city of the Red Sea. During the time of David and Solomon, not only did they have the land that they possessed that was given to them, but they controlled all the surrounding land. And during the reign of David and Solomon, they controlled, they had the seaport. Solomon had a seaport way down here on the Red Sea. But after the kingdom started divided and the persecution started, that port city was taken away. And we just read, as Doug read, that that city was recaptured. So the, again, indicating prosperity, they're growing very strong militarily. Uzziah overall is a righteous king. Okay, let's go on now. Doug's also going to do the second king. Okay, Doug, the second king.
Jotham, the son of Uzziah, was king in the second year of the reign of Pekah, who was king of Israel. He began his reign at 25 years old and reigned for 16 years. His reign overlapped with the reign of his father, Uzziah, because his father was struck by the Lord with leprosy and was isolated to live in a separate house. King Jotham did right in the sight of the Lord. However, the high places were not taken down. Also, he did not enter the temple of the Lord, following in the footsteps of his father. The people continued to act corruptly. He built many structures during his reign. These include the upper gate of the house of the Lord, wall of Ophel, cities in the hill country of Judah, and fortresses and towers on the wooded hills. He fought with the king of the Ammonites and prevailed over them. They gave him silver, wheat, and barley, and continued to do so for 3 years. He became mighty because he ordered his ways before the Lord. During his reign, Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, captured certain parts of Israel and took captives to Assyria. Also, the Lord began to send Rezin, king of Aram, and Remaliah, king of Israel, against Judah.
Jotham was a what kind of king?
Righteous.
It was a righteous king. Okay, and then we got another P. Is everything that Doug read, what do you also find during this time? Another P. Another prosperity. All these buildings, all this growth that's going on. And some of these things are pretty straightforward. Some people still practice, though, idolatry. So even though he was a righteous king, his righteous acts didn't get all the way to the people and getting them to remove the idolatry. And the last one, as Doug read, the people practiced what? Or acted? They acted corruptly. Okay, so now let's go on to the third king. Third king's going to be Todd. Todd's going to do the third king. He's going to just do the first three paragraphs.
Okay. King Ahaz, who was the son of Jotham, became king in the 17th year of the reign of Pekah, king of Israel. He was 20 years old when he became king, and he reigned for 16 years. He did not do what was, he did not do what was right in the sight of his father, as his father David had done. He walked in the ways of Israel, made his sons pass through the fire according to abominations of the nations, of the driven out nations, sacrificed and burned incense on the high places, made molten images of Baals, and burned incense in the valley of Ben-Hinnom. During the last part of the reign of the previous king, Rezin, king of Aram, and Pekah, king of Israel, come to Jerusalem to wage war. They camped in Ephraim, and King Ahaz and the people were very scared. The Lord told Isaiah to go to King Ahaz and tell him their invasion would not stand. In 65 years, Ephraim will be shattered, and Damascus will not last. The Lord spoke to King Ahaz and told him to ask for a sign. King Ahaz refused. The Lord gave a sign about the virgin bearing a son named Emmanuel. The Lord was going to send the king of Assyria against them a second time. Due to King Ahaz's sins, the Lord delivered him into the hand of Rezin, king of Aram, and Pekah, king of Israel. The king of Aram came up to Jerusalem, besieged the city, and defeated King Ahaz, but could not completely overthrow him. King Rezin took a great number of captives and brought them to Damascus. Rezin recovered Elath, for Aram, and cleared the Judeans out of Elath. Meanwhile, Pekah, king of Israel, inflicted Judah with great losses and slew 120,000 valiant men in one day. Zichri, Z-I-C-H-R-I, a mighty man of Ephraim, slew Maaseiah, the king's son, Azrikam, the ruler of the house, and Elkanah, the second to the king. Israel carried away 200,000 of their brethren. Oded, O-D-E-D, the prophet of the Lord, came to the army of Syria, of Samaria, and told Judah, and told them Judah was delivered into their hand because the Lord was angry with them. However, the Lord was angry with the army of Israel because brethren of Judah were slain, because they slew the brethren of Judah in rage. So slain in rage. The prophet instructed them to return the brethren to Judah. So the officers took the captives, clothed the naked ones, fed them, gave them drink, anointed them with oil, and brought them to Jericho.
Okay, good. All right. Sally's going to do the next three paragraphs. Let me stop here and point out that, as Todd read, this alliance between King Aram and the Northern Kingdom. They've taken captives away from Judah and taken them to Damascus. Remember we talked about Isaiah's children. His first son was named about a remnant would return. His first son's names mean. Well, what remnant? I kept pointing out in class, it's not the remnant in the Babylonian captivity. It's this remnant. These are some captives from Judah are already taken captive. You read 200,000. But Isaiah, and through his son, God showed the sign, those are going to come back. It's not going to be a permanent thing. Okay, Sally, good, Todd. Sally, do the next three paragraphs.
Judah was not only afflicted by Syria, Aram, but the Edomites had attacked Judah and carried away captives. In addition, the Philistines also had invaded the cities of the lowland and Negev of Judah, taken six villages and settled there. The Lord humbled Judah because of King Ahaz had brought about a lack of restraint in Judah and was very unfaithful to the Lord. To obtain help, Ahaz sent messengers to Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, and said, I am your servant, deliver me. He took silver and gold from the house of the Lord and sent it to the king of Assyria. Assyria went up against Damascus, a chief city of Syria, captured it, and carried the people away into exile to Kir. Rezin was also put to death. King Ahaz went to Damascus to meet with the king of Assyria. He saw the altar there and told Uriah or Urijah, the priest, to pattern the altar in Jerusalem. In Jerusalem, King Ahaz went up to the altar and burned his burnt and meat offerings and poured his libation and sprinkled the blood of peace offerings on the altar. He instructed Urijah the priest to make offerings on this new great altar. He moved the bronze altar and put it on the north side of his altar. King Ahaz cut off the borders of the stands, removed the laver from them, and took down the sea from the bronze oxen. Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, came up against King Hoshea and imprisoned him. I couldn't figure this one out. The second blank. Did what?
The king came against King Ahaz and afflicted him instead of strengthening him.
Even though he gave him treasures from the temple. During the distress, King Ahaz became yet more unfaithful to the Lord by sacrificing to gods of Damascus, which defeated him. He said, because the gods of the kings of Aram helped them, I will sacrifice to them that they may help me. But they became the downfall of him and all Israel. King Ahaz gathered utensils from the house and cut them into pieces, closed the doors of the house of the Lord, and made altars for himself in every corner of Jerusalem, in every city of Judah. He made high places to burn incense to other gods and provoked the Lord to anger. When King Ahaz died, he was not buried in the tombs of the kings of Israel.
So I got four things, and so first one's pretty easy. What kind of king was King Ahaz?
The next page.
Melanie, what page? Okay. Get way ahead of his toy. We just finished the third king. We're here in the fourth king, but we'll pick up here in the fourth king in a minute. Okay, so Ahaz, what kind of king was he? He was a very evil king. Okay, next one, I have open and then eye. What do you think that's about? Open what? Open idolatry. Everywhere you see that before the high places weren't taken down, but now the entire country is exploding in just open idolatry. Okay, next one might be kind of difficult here, but I have an O and a C. I want to give it a try. What do you think the O stands for? I think I heard the word. Oppression. Okay. Oppression and C. And corruption, or the thing I was looking for captivity. That was the point that some of they were taken captive. And so here the Northern Nations Alliance have taken their own brethren of the Southern Kingdom into captivity. Okay, the last one, T blank and D blank. What do you think the T's about? What did you say, Jim? Total depravity. It's a good fill in. That's great. I'm thinking about something else. Okay. T, temple. And what do you think the D stands for? The temple is desecrated. Right. Here, King Ahaz is patterning an idolatry, God's altar, putting in the temple, changing around all the furniture and, you know, just changing everything. So here the temple has been desecrated. So we see here just definitely a very, very evil, evil king. But recognize all these kings are in the lineage of David. And remember Ahaz, his father was Jotham, was a righteous king. So this is one of the things we've noticed as we studied the Old Testament about the kings. You can have a very good king, good father. Does not necessarily mean the son is very, very good. Okay, let's now go to the fourth king. And we'll talk about, we're going to break this one up into a couple of sections. The first one I have is John, a Whitehead. So we're into the fourth king of the temple.
King Hezekiah, who was son of Ahaz, became king in the third year of Hoshea, king of Israel. He was 25 years old when he began and reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. He did right in the sight of God according to his father David. He removed the high places and broke down sacred pillars and cut down the Ashtaroth. He broke into pieces the bronze serpent Moses had made because the people burned incense to it. He trusted in the Lord and did not depart from following him and kept his commandments. The Lord was with him and he prospered. The fourth king, the temple. In the first year of his reign, Hezekiah opened the doors of the house of the Lord and repaired them, brought in the priests, and Levites, got them to consecrate themselves and the house of the Lord, and told the priests to offer sacrifice to the Lord. Sons of Aaron did what the king commanded. After the consecration, the king assembled the princes to the people and went to the house of the Lord, brought the animal sacrifices, and he ordered the sons of Aaron to offer them. The priests slaughtered the sacrifices to atone for Israel. The king also stationed the Levites with, cymbals, harps, lyres. And they began to, offer, sing, play instruments, and worship as a whole. To the Lord. And the whole assembly worshiped. And the assembly brought sacrifices and thank offerings to the Levites and were offered by the priests. Sacrifice on the house of the Lord was established again. Hezekiah sent letters to all Israel and Judah to come to Jerusalem and to celebrate the Passover. He issued a decree throughout Israel to celebrate the Passover to the Lord as it was prescribed. As couriers passed from city to city, they laughed them to scorn and mocked them. However, some from Israel came to Jerusalem. The hand of the Lord was on Judah to give them one heart to do what the king commanded. people removed the incense altars and cast them into the Kidron Brook. Many celebrated the Feast of Unleavened Bread, but many were unclean. Hezekiah prayed that God would forgive them. God heard and healed them. There was a great joy in Jerusalem due to the feast or Passover, because nothing like this had happened since the days of Solomon. After the celebration, the people broke the pillars, cut the asherim, pulled down the high places and the altars throughout all Jerusalem and parts of Israel. Hezekiah appointed divisions of, I put priests and Levites, for the offerings and allocated goods for sacrifices to do what was commanded in the house of the Lord. He also took people to contribute to the priests, Levites, that they may devote themselves to the Lord and the, now here's where I had three different answers. The priesthood or the priest support, and I even put Passover as a whole.
I put order.
Okay.
All those are back to the point.
Okay. Was established. There was an oversupply of offerings as the Lord blessed his people. Every work that Hezekiah did in the service of the house of the Lord, he did with his heart and prospered.
Okay. All right. Now, Elizabeth, got the long entry. You got five paragraphs. So, Elizabeth, if you can do the fourth king of the battles.
King Hezekiah rebelled against King of Assyria and did not serve him. He defeated the Philistines as far as Gaza. In his fourth year, Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, came against Samaria and besieged it. At the end of 3 years, they captured it and carried Israel away into exile and placed them into the cities of the Medes. This was done because Israel did not listen to the Lord. In the 14th year of his reign, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came against fortified cities of Judah and seized them. As he approached Jerusalem, Hezekiah had his men cut off the water supply to prevent the Assyrians from freely drinking. He rebuilt the wall, erected towers, built another outside wall, and made many weapons and shields. He also appointed military officers over the people. He told the people to be strong and courageous and know that the Lord will fight our battles, and the people relied on Hezekiah's words. Then Hezekiah said to King of Assyria, "I have done wrong. Withdraw from me, and whatever you impose on me, I will bear. King of Assyria, ask for 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold. Hezekiah gave all the silver found in the house of the Lord, cut off the gold from the doors of the temple, and gave it to the king. However, this did not satisfy Assyria, so the king of Assyria sent Rabshakeh and a large army. They came to Jerusalem, stood by the conduit of the upper pool that is on the highway of the Fuller's Field. Rabshakeh, the messenger from the king, spoke to Eliakim, Shebna, and Joah, and said, 'Whom do you rely on that you have rebelled against me?' He went on to say, 'Do not rely on Egypt or the Lord your God.' He offered to give them 2,000 horses. He even told them he had the Lord's approval to go up to this land and destroy it."
Okay, let's stop there. We're just about out of time.
So, Elizabeth, if you pick that up on Wednesday, I'd appreciate it. So you won't be here Wednesday, so we'll finish this part here. So thank you for all the volunteers who did this. Hopefully that was helpful and beneficial to you. So as we do in our lessons, we always start with review. We always end with application. So let's talk about, you know, what we heard and the things that, if you've done the exercise or heard what was read here. What can we learn from all this? And I had a couple of lessons. If you're looking in the notes, if you go to the end of your lesson, toward the end of the lesson, number 7, there are some lessons there. I'm just going to go through the points here. First of all, remember Uzziah, the first king. He was a very righteous king. He started out very righteous. The Lord prospered him. But what happened? He went in the temple and he offered incense. Why did he do that? Well, he became very prideful. And one of our lessons I think we can learn from this is about pride. Pride can be our downfall, and also can be a downfall of this nation. And that's something we can all, each of us, work on. When we start relying on others, relying on the nation or institutions, when we start not relying on God, we start and start relying on our own things and start becoming very full of pride, it can be our downfall. You know, would it have caught Uzziah? Well, the Lord inflicted him with leprosy. And all through this Jewish history, you know, pride was probably one of the main problems they had in addition to idolatry. So I think that's something that we can learn on. The second thing we can learn on from, I think, what has been read in this historical accounts of these four kings is the wickedness of individuals can influence others. Look what Ahaz did. Remember the nation, the first two kings, they had high places, but there was not open idolatry. Ahaz opened up the gates, and the whole nation became corrupt. So think of yourself as your influence in your family. If you're a leader of the family, or your impact on the job or in your neighborhood, your righteousness or your unrighteousness can influence others. You see that by these leaders, these kings. And that can result in serious consequences in others. Now, for the good part, you know, we can be righteous. We can be, you know, Christians like we ought to be and show good influence and influence both our families and people that are around us. Okay, so we'll stop there and we'll pick up where Elizabeth stopped. And if you haven't done the lesson, filling out the blanks, it'll be a very helpful exercise. If you haven't done that, I encourage you to do that. Thank you for your good attention.